podcast you are about to listen to will contain detailed plot spoilers. If you do not wish to have the movie ruined for you, I recommend turning the podcast off now. Also, the podcast will contain graphic and explicit language. If you don't think your ears can handle it, turn the podcast off and go change your tampon. You have been warned.
Let's all go to the lobby. Let's all go to the...
Welcome back to the Movie Pit Podcast, your sanctuary of cinematic slaughterhouse critiques and movie madness with me, your host Boozer, back again, live and in person to spill the booze and the truth in equal measure if you're a fan of my famously charming sarcasm and my kind of language that would make a sailor blush. Then you've buckled up for the right ride. So before we get into this, gonna do a little bit of spring cleaning here. Back live and in person, like I said. This is because with the not just only the inclusion of the Witching Hour now on the main feed, as well as the Horror Report, there's a lot of writing that's going into this. But anyone that could, I've kind of hinted at it at the beginning of the year that I'm going to start bringing back, resurrecting some shit that I used to do in the past, and one of those things I mentioned was 31 Days of Halloween, and that is coming to fruition. And I have officially written and starting to record, but I just wanted to get all that crap out of the way, so that's why I was using text-to-speech on pretty much the entirety of... not pretty much, the entirety of the Hatchet runs. And people say, well, that's just fucking lazy. No, it's not fucking lazy. You think about it, podcasts are normally once a week, especially in long form content, especially if you're writing at all. How many days are in Halloween? Or in October, I should say. 31. That's more than half a year's worth of regular podcasts. So yes, in October, you're going to get 31 reviews from the 1st to the 31st just for 31 days of Halloween. That does not include the regular weekly Movie Pit podcast. So that's a shit ton of content. And that's the reason why I've been streamlining some of this shit. But I'm caught up. We're ready. And we're ready to continue this madness, and we're going to start that day and they'll plunge into the murky waters of Night Swim. We're talking cursed backyards, haunted pools, and suburban families with more issues than the last damn magazine you actually bought. That's right, Brycey Boy McGuire pulled a bait and switch with his feature directorial debut, and it's about as satisfying as a fart in a wetsuit. So before we nosedive into the supernatural clusterfuck, we'll get our ears a teasing tingle or unwanted reach around with the movie's trailer. Buckle up. After these dulcet tones wrap up the sneak peek, we'll be back to ripping the Night Swim. See you when we get back.
It needs a little work, but I don't think it's going to last long at this price.
There's a pool. I always wanted a pool.
Is this everything?
We'll grow into it.
Y'all ready?
Marco.
Hello.
Marco.
Hello.
Marco. I hear you. You need to say something back. Ronan, Marco. Marco. I can hear you. Why aren't you saying anything? Ronan, you're dead. Marco.
Welcome, movie lovers, cinephiles, and everyone who gets a shiver of excitement from a spine-chilling horror flick or a cult classic. We're thrilled to bring you today's episode of the Movie Pit Podcast, courtesy of Shout Factory and Scream Factory, your ultimate havens for films that define, defy, and push the limits of cinema. With Shout Factory, you're diving into a treasure trove of unforgettable movies and TV shows that have shaped generations. From gripping documentaries to animated adventures, Shout Factory brings you the content you love in deluxe Blu-rays and exclusive collector's editions. Ever wanted to own a piece of film history? Shout Factory's lovingly crafted releases are a cinephile's dream. And for those who hear the call of the dark side, who relish the thrill of a jump scare, and who appreciate the art of classic horror and sci-fi, Scream Factory welcomes you with open arms. With meticulously restored screen gems, collector's edition box sets, and enough supplementary content to satiate even the most ardent of horror aficionados, Scream Factory ensures the thrills keep coming long after the credits have rolled. For quality, nostalgia, and a dedication to the movies and series that won your heart, look no further than Shout and Scream Factory. Discover lost titles, revisit old favorites, and experience the best in high definition. What are you waiting for? Add a little cinematic magic to your collection today. Check out their eclectic and extensive catalog at shoutfactory.com. Elevate your movie night with a purchase from the masters of film restoration and distribution. And now, sit back, relax, and enjoy today's feature on the Movie Pit Podcast, brought to you by Shout Factory and Scream Factory, where the movies come alive right in your living room.
Strap the hell in, because you're about to dissect this piece of cinematic shit that called Night Swim. Now, I love the idea of a suburban family finding their pool is haunted as much as the next masochist out there. But Jesus fucking Christ, this film had me wishing for a real life haunting just so I'd actually fucking feel something. So let's kick this off. We open up in 1992, and there's little Rebecca Summers trying to get her bros toy boat from the pool. Now, if you thought that toy boat would sail smoothly into her hands, you've clearly had too much optimism juice. This pool goes all squiddy on her and drags her down like the last hopes of a decent plot. Flash forward to present day, and we've got the Waller family looking for a new home. They find this place with a pool that clearly did not come with a may cause supernatural side effects warning label. Baseball had been benched for Ray due to his illness, and the pool is supposed to be his Hail Mary, but it's more like an Our Father of Ocean. A scratched hand, a self-maintaining pool, and Ray's sudden recovery all add up to a cobweb cliches. He was like, hubby's acting sort of weird, but it takes a pool party for someone to spill the beans about the pool's shady-ass past. Rebecca drowned here, they tell her, and the pool's probably more cursed than a sailor with Tourette's. Ray's playing Drown the Kid, parental supervision style, and everybody's just writing it off as side effects. Eve's spidey senses are tingling by now as she's off playing Nancy Drew with the past owners, uncovering a plot twist so obvious a blind man saw it coming. Turns out, The pool's got a thirstier appetite than me at an open bar. The healing spring under the swimming pool demands sacrifice, which is basically a shittier version of healthcare. Lucy, the previous owner, admits she fed her daughter to the pool to save her son. It's a feel-bad buffet, and Eve realizes one of her kiddos is about to be the main course. At Casa de Waller, Ray's gone full puppet for the wet devil below, and Izzy and Elliot are on the menu. Cue dramatic rescue attempt number one, followed by the kids' fighting bag, which, by the way, includes Izzy going full major league on Possess Ray's ass. After too damn long, Eve manages to pull Elliot to the surface, guided by Rebecca's conventionally hopeful ghost. Ray breaks free of the wet stranglehold long enough to offer himself up as the happy hour special, and the kids are saved. In a baffling twist of Stockholm Syndrome, they stay in the house, ready for the plot to thicken like week-old gravy. They're considering filling in the pool to prevent any future Olympic tryouts for the deck. In scene after godforsaken scene, we tread through this murky plot like an endless swimsuit. Every character's decision is dumber than the last, characters popping up without a purpose, and not once does somebody think, hey, maybe a haunted polter pool needs more than a damn pool cover. By now, my brain cells have filed for hazard pay. Night Swim does for the horror what inflatable arm wings did for the Hindenburg. Jack in fucking shit. I mean, who needs coherence and subtlety when you have spooky water and ghost feel near drownings? Now, I'd love to say it gets better from here, but I'm not a goddamn liar. I'm a lot of things, but a liar is not one of them. This film stretches its concept thinner than my patience, and let's just say my patience is already on a diet. Ranters and ravers, let's gear up for another horde of hair-pulling moments up after this break, because we're going to get started dissecting a little bit more, talking about the acting and all that bullshit, as we normally do in this format.
There is a creature alive today who has survived millions of years of evolution without change, without passion, and without logic. It lives to kill. A mindless eating machine. It will attack and devour anything. It is as if God created the devil and gave him jaws. This is Universal's extraordinary motion picture version of Peter Benchley's best-selling novel, Jaws.
I just found out that a girl got killed here last week, and you knew it. You knew there was a shark out there. You knew it was dangerous, but you let people go swimming anyway.
You yell barracuda.
Everybody says,
huh?
What?
You yell shark. We've got a panic on our hands on the 4th of July.
Is it true that most people get attacked by sharks in 3 feet of water, about 10 feet from the beach?
Yeah.
What we are dealing with here is a perfect engine, an eating machine.
We're not only going to have to close the beach, we're going to have to hire somebody to kill the shark.
Bad fish. But I'll catch him and kill him.
Did you hear your father? Out of the water now!
This shark, swallow you whole.
You're gonna need a bigger boat.
That's a 20-footer.
25. 3 tons of them.
Hurry up, he's coming straight for us. Don't screw it up now.
Don't wait for me. Now! Shoot!
Come on.
man's fantasies of evil can compare with the reality of Jaws. Roy Scheider, Robert Shaw, Richard Dreyfuss, Jaws. See it before you go swimming.
Hello there, I'm Tobin Bell from the Saw franchise. I want to play a game. The rules of this game are simple. Up until now, you've simply sat in the shadows, listening to the world around you. But now I challenge you to become an active participant in your love of cinema. There is a podcast, The Movie Pit, that dives into the abyss of film, dissecting and discussing what many simply watch passively. It's a space where narratives intertwine, where the silver screen secrets are laid bare for your auditory pleasure. So now you must make a choice. Will you ignore this opportunity, letting the static of countless other distractions drown out your passion? Or will you tune in, engage your senses, and embrace the depths of this cinematic exploration? Remember, the choice you make will show the value you place on the wealth of knowledge that awaits. So I ask you, live or die, make your choice.
The cast of Night Swim, what a mixed bag we're dealing with here. Let's kick things off with Wyatt Russell, our leading man playing Ray Waller. You might remember him as the dude from Overlord and that kind of wacky but mostly disappointing season of Black Mirror. The one that you felt like you were being shoved through an endless funhouse mirror maze with absolutely no fucking exit. Drags on like a freaking sloth on sedatives. I'll tell you, now in Night Swim, Wyatt brings his all. I give him credit for that. But it's like trying to make a gourmet meal out of cat food. It can only get so good, folks. And by good, I mean passable. If you're four beers in and it's the only thing that's in the fridge. This performance dips and dives. Maybe he's channeling the pool spirit trying to reach those depths. But come on, man. You're not diving for Oscars here. Just give us something that I can say I don't hate. Moving on to Kerry Condon as Eve Waller. You might recall her voice more than her face, seeing as she's been Tony Stark's AI pal in the Marvel flicks. Yeah, that's her trying to slap some sense into the Iron Man. In Night Swim, she struggles to keep the family together and keep up the convoluted plot, like wrestling an octopus in a laundry net. She does what she can with her role, and honestly, I respect her for not just phoning it in and actually trying to pretend she sees something in the pool other than a paycheck. Then we have the kids. Amelia, and I'm going to butcher this last name, Hofferi, as Izzy Waller, and Gavin Warren as the little troublemaker, Elliot Waller. I'd say the apple doesn't far too far from the tree, but in this case, it's like the apple shot out of a cannon and is a completely different direction. These kids are giving us some genuine moments. You've got to hand it to them for that. Gavin here, you might have seen him in a movie with Brad Pitt, Ad Astra, is treating like a shot to skip the Disney Channel and head straight to grown-up table. But not half bad, kiddo. I'll give you credit for that one. Amelia, well, she's relatively fresh meat, but she sure ain't acting like it. She's chomping into the scenes, trying to make a bland steak taste like Kobe beef. Kudos for the effort, but sometimes all the acting chops in the world can't save you from a screenplay that seems like logic is a suggestion rather than a rule. And I gotta pour one out for our supporting cast. Jodie Long as Lucy Summers, the mom with a backstory so sad it'd depress a Hallmark movie, and Nancy Linehan, who turns up as Realtor Kate with the kind of exposition that's about as subtle as a sledgehammer to the face. You get the sense that they're hoping for that one role will really show their chops, but instead they got a script that's as lost as a vegan at a barbecue competition. Then there's our pool tech, Ben Sinclair, who pops up like he's about to lead a seance for all the dead screen time. Not a bad actor, But when you're handed lines like a crusty pizza menu, what can you do? And I gotta mention Eddie Martinez as Coachy, giving us great coach vibes with as much gusto as he can muster when the rest of the movie is sinking faster than a bowling ball in quicksand. So folks, what's the verdict? These actors, bless their trembling thespian hearts, they're leaping into the deep end with lead shoes on. They're doing the breaststroke through a sea of mediocrity, trying to make a silk purse out of a sow's ear, or however the hell the saying goes. It's like the director asked them to paint the Sistine Chapel, but only gave them finger paints and a very, very dark room. In all honesty, the talent is there, underused, but there. If only they weren't swimming against the tide in a mess of a film that's got less direction than a broken compass. It's a damn shame, a waste of potential that should be illegal. But hey, at least they can put the stinker on their resumes and move on to, hopefully, less murky waters. All right. Now that we got that out of the way, strap in because we're diving headfirst in the murky waters of Bryce McGuire's directorial debut. And let me tell you, if this film were a dive, it'd be the kind that belly flops so hard it would leave a mark for weeks. So here's the deal. McGuire, bless his ambitious heart, steps up to the big leagues, swimming for the cinematic fences right out the gate. He wants to put his own spin on the supernatural horror genre, and sure, the idea of a haunted swimming pool. It's like he's trying to crossbreed Poltergeist with an Olympic-sized nightmare. Points for the original concept. But here's where things get very murky. Like, murkier than a dirty hot tub after a frat party. McGuire seems to be doggy paddling in the deep end when it comes to sustaining that gripping fear factor. We've got your suburban family, the creepy pool, the checklist of ghostly shenanigans. I mean, it's all there. But it feels like he's throwing every inflatable horror trope into the pool without checking if it's got any air in them. Here's my hot take. Ego directing. McGuire's got his hands on the semi-autobiographical tell, looking to exercise his own water demons or whatnot. Nostalgia is a powerful thing, but it can totally backfire if you can't make your audience give a shit about your childhood phobias, if you understand what I'm saying. Let's talk about tension, or should I say the lack thereof. It's like McGuire's trying to build this tower of terror, but instead he's giving us a one-story bungalow, moments that should have you clinging to your seat are about as thrilling as watching paint dry on a garden gnome. And that's the only time you'll ever hear me talk about garden gnomes, but that's a story for another day. You want us on edge, man. Make us afraid to dip our toes in the water. Make us feel like we're drowning in the suspense, not casually wading through it. The pacing is another kettle of fish. And trust me, this ain't the kind you want to keep in your fancy aquarium. One second you're trudging along through the backstory and character development, that's as exciting as a seminar on watching grass grow, and the next it's like somebody's screamed shark, and everyone's rushing around in a panic, running around like a chicken with their heads cut off. Bryce, man, when you take the helm of a horror flick, you gotta be a maestro, orchestrating every streak, every jump, every quiver in the audience's spine. I'm seeing a whole bunch of missed opportunities where this flick could have grabbed us. Like that scene where the dad's hand gets scratched. Come on, it could have been a deliciously sinister foreshadowing. Don't get me wrong, there's some glimmers of hope in there. You can see moments where McGuire's potential shines through like a creepy moonlit glint on the pool surface. There are a couple of sequences that nearly had me spilling my beer, and I don't waste beer for just any old scare. But it's like finding a perfectly good french fry at the bottom of a canister of rotten ones. Just doesn't redeem the whole mess. So in conclusion, Bryce McGuire's Night Swim, it's like watching somebody try to perform a complicated dive and ending up with a belly flop instead. And I give him an A for effort, my dude. But next time, let's try to actually clear the water, okay? Otherwise, you might just find your audience heading back to the showers long before the credits roll. All right, let's dive into this freaking travesty they call the script. Night Swim. More like Night Sink. With the weight of this goddamn anchor of a storyline they're trying to pass off as horror, but I get it. We all love a little supernatural flair with our scares, but come on. A haunted pool. This idea barely floats in a short film, let alone a feature-length film. It's like trying to watch somebody inflate a pool with a damn asthma inhaler. So the plot. In the moment, we've got this washed-up baseball player, Ray, who's about as deep as a kiddie pool. And there's his family, yada yada, looking for a house, yada yada. So what do they find? A freaking money pit with a cursed body of water in the backyard. Talk about your all-time backfires in real estate. Now, I don't want to spend too much time on the setup because it's as original as a photocopy of a photocopy. Moving on, we spend half the script watching Ray scratch his hand. Groundbreaking, I fucking know. And then seeing him dip into the pool like it's the Fountain of Fucking Youth, I bet even Ponce de Leon would have face-palmed at this shit show. The family dynamic is as believable as me winning award for most family-friendly critic. The dialogue in this movie is so damn corny, it must have been sponsored by Orville Redenbacher or some such shit. We get obvious foreshadowing dumped on us like sludge from a busted septic tank. Oh, the pool is self-sustaining. Gee, where could this possibly be going? And don't get me started on the absurd mythology of the healing spring that demands sacrifices. At this point, you're just praying that the script will sacrifice itself to save us all from further torment. Then there's the mother Eve's war when she learns the truth. It's about as shocking as a static cling. You can see this twist coming from the next freaking county over. And little Izzy, she goes from innocent child to bat-wielding badass in a time frame that makes zero fucking sense whatsoever. Sure, let the kids deal with the demonic entities because the adults are about as useful as poopy-flavored lollipops. And would you look at that? They stay in the house at the end because that makes total fucking sense, right? Who wouldn't want to live in a murder mansion with a history of drowning kids and vanishing pets? Pack the bags, honey. We found our fucking dream mode. This script is a hot fucking mess. A tangled sludge of cliches, empty jump scares, and a concept that may have, well... and a concept that may have played well in a 5-minute YouTube clip, but stumbles like a drunken sailor on the big screen. Bryce, I don't know what personal demons you're wrestling with, but this semi-autobiographical connection... might want to keep that to your shrink sessions. Don't put it on the big screen. The one saving grace is that there is a few good lines, but that's like saying a sinking ship has a nice paint job. Doesn't matter if the damn thing's going down, it's barely treading water, and that's me being the optimistic fucking lifeguard here. So script and writing on analysis verdict felt like a throwback, but not in a good 80s nostalgia way. More likely this should have stayed in the 80s way. Hey, some might give this script a F for effort, but I'll generously give it a D minus. Just remember, this is the kind of movie you show to aspiring writers as a warning. Don't fucking do this. Ever. Alright, enough of the script autopsy. Moving on before I need a session with my own fucking therapist. Alright, strap in, my little gorgles, because it's time about to get freaking gritty with the cinematography of Night Swim. If you've got delicate sensibilities, time to bail because I'm about to shred this thing like a salad at a hipster joint. First off, let's chat about the whole visual vibe of this so-called supernatural horror. We open up with the typical shot of suburbia. Ooh, scary, manufactured lawns, I'm shaking in my boots. But then, nighttime hits. And we've got the trusty old swimming pool. You'd think with a premise centered around a possessed pool, we'd get some gnarly underwater shots, right? Something that had you crapping your pants at the mere thought of dipping your toes in the water. But nope. What we get is, like the cameraman was too scared to dip his lens in the deep end. We're talking missed opportunities left and right. you remember that scene when Little Miss Peaches Izzy is just chilling by the water? The camera's so fucking far away, you'd need binoculars. We should have been right there in the splash zone, getting up close with the tension, feeling like you're going to be yanked under at any second. And when stuff does go down in the drink, it's all just watered down. No pun intended, but hella works. The color grading of this film's all over the damn place. One minute it's blue like a sad clown's makeup. The next it's green like someone's gone and puked up pea soup. Pick a lane and fucking drive in it. Now let's talk about lighting. This flick's got shadows darker than my soul on a bad day. Which, yeah, adds to the spooky factor. But sometimes you can't see a motherfucking thing. It's like, are we being haunted, or is the electric bill just too high to turn on a few damn more lights? The only consistent thing about it was its inconsistency. I mean, come the fuck on. And okay, I'll throw a bone here. There are a few shots that weren't totally trash. At the moment where Eve thinks she's alone in the backyard and the camera does a slow creep, that actually was slicker than a used car salesman, in my opinion. It builds up some serious suspense. I'll give him that. Too bad the rest of the film couldn't keep that vibe going. Now, what about the pool scenes? They could have been etched in the horror history, but the execution was flatter than a beer left out overnight. Those reflections and rippling effects had potential, but it was like watching somebody try to light a wet firework. All build up, no bang. Then there's the close-ups. I'll admit, when Ray gets all possessed and bug-eyed, staring into your soul like he's going to sell you on eBay, that was a solid choice. We needed more of that unsettling intimacy, where it feels like the characters are about to crawl out of the screen and whisper sweet nothings about death into your ear. Listen, I can go on forever about how this film's visual storytelling was about as effective as a screen door on a submarine, but let's wrap this dissection up. It's like this. Night Swim had the setup to be a visual feast, a deliciously dark horror show that could make you never want to go near a swimming pool again. Instead, it floated like one of those pathetic inflatable ducks in the shallow end. I'm all about brutal honesty here, and that's just the tip of the murdered iceberg when it comes to Night Swim. But hey, they can't all be masterpieces, right? And for anyone that thinks I've gone soft for not flaying this thing worse, hold on to your guts, because we got plenty more film to hack through. Alright, let's slice this godforsaken film open and see what the hell the editor was fucking thinking. Let me tell you, folks, the editing of Night Swim has more choppy cuts than a butcher with Parkinson's. I get it. Horror movies love their quick cuts, their snappy misdirection. But in this case, it's like somebody took a meat cleaver to the film reel. It's a hot fucking mess. First off, that opening scene. Could we linger any longer on the toy boat, bobbling like a fucking drunken sailor? We got a pool. We got the night. We get it. It's a setup. But instead of building suspense, it's more like they're trying to bore us to death before anything fucking happens. And let me tell you something about the transitions. It's as if this editor figured out how to power page shit out of the scenes, fading in and out like your grandfather's hearing aid. And the pacing, oh fuck. The pacing. It's like we're on a rowboat with only one fucking oar. The film can't decide whether it's sprinting to the next jump scare or crawling through molasses during those traumatic family moments. One second you got your heart racing, underwater camera work that's making you crab your swimming trunks. Next you're watching paint dry as Ray scratches his hand for a millennia. Now, somewhere mid-film, there's a montage that's supposed to show passage of time or some artsy crap like that. But instead of feeling like we're moving through the weeks, it's more jumbled than my Aunt Patty after two bottles of fucking whiskey. The kids are swimming, Ray's getting better, Eve's knitting a sweater or some nonsense. Who the hell can keep track of this shit? Then don't get me started on those fucking pool attacks. The editing's all over the place, like they're cutting between a slasher flick and the home video of Uncle Jerry's pool party from 1992. There's no rhythm to the tear. It's like the editor said, screw tension. Let's just throw everything at the screen and see what sticks. Then we hit the climax, the big showdown with the pool ghoul. Between you and me, the editing is so fucking shoddy that it's like watching a bad music video. Quick cuts of Izzy swinging a bat, water splashing, Ray's possessed face. It's a sensory overload without the satisfaction. It's like the editor took a bet on how many cuts he could fit into a minute and went balls to the wall. Closing it all up, the finale is a haphazard debacle of rest sequences. Suddenly, everything's fine. The family's coping and they decided to fill the pool in because apparently that's how you deal with the supernatural beings these days. The pacing here is so rushed, it's as if the editor realized they're about to hit the runtime and had to wrap it up faster than a teenager's first time in the backseat of a car, if you catch my drift. And that's it, folks. Night Swim's editing is a lesson in what the fuck not to do, unless you're aiming to give your audience whiplash or an existential crisis trying to figure out what the fuck has just happened. It's enough to make me want to fill my own pool in with concrete, if I had one, that is. So, who's up for a dip? Not me. Not having seen this butchered piece of shit, and I've seen it a few times, and this film is just literally just masquerading around as a horror flick. The only thing haunting me is the thought that the editor thought, yeah, that's the ticket. That'll really get under this skin. Okay, now let's dive into something that hopefully will be the bright point of this. Let's talk about the score of Night Swim, composed by the one and only Mark Corbin, who scored the Blumhouse Chill Fest, The Black Foam. I'll tell you, Marky Boy's a freaking maestro when it comes to making your skin crawl with his creeptastic tunes, and he doesn't disappoint here. So we kick off with Opening, a 2-minute, 50-second track that's supposed to lure us in like unsuspecting prey wading into shark-infested waters. I gotta admit, it sets a tone darker than the coffee stain on your desk. But Jesus fucking Christ, does this film need it? Because the only thing scarier than the music is the thought of sitting through another scene of this goddamn film. Then you got Ray's Fall. It's brief, it's about 1 minute and 19 seconds. But Corbin packs it with enough ominous sounds to make you feel like you're sinking with Ray. That's right, sinking in the abyss of this movie's plot. Nostalgia. Now there's something ironic about the name of this track, because there's not a damn thing I'm feeling sentimental about for this movie at this point. The score is weaving some kind of 80s vibe playing off Ray's metal days. It's like if nostalgia took a wrong turn and ended up at a haunted house, which is actually not too shabby for setting up the mess we're seeing on screen. When we slide into the track Pool Scare Healing, now this one's a doozy. 3 minutes of Corbin whispering sweet nightmares in your ear. You can almost feel the eerie calm of the pool before it goes all psycho on the Waller kids. The music's got this lurking danger, like when you can sense your ex lurking at the same bar over your shoulder. You're just waiting for shit to hit the fan. And Marco Polo, anyone? Well, it's not the fun pool game you're thinking of. Nope. 1 minute and 21 seconds of suspense that's tighter than your skinny jeans after Thanksgiving dinner. But let's be real. It's one of the few moments in the film that doesn't completely piss me off. Then there is He Won't Let Go, fucking appropriate, because it's like the film's got a hold of you and won't let go, despite your desperate pleas for mercy. It's like Corbin is twisting the knife, or in this case, the pool mat, further into the wound. The deep water gives you the sensation of being cooled down to where the sun don't shine anymore. Kudos to Corbin for actually making me feel something other than contempt. Even if it's just abject fear for one mere second. The track Even Ray Fight Back is a track where you expect some heavy emotional shit. But it's over before you can even say marital discord. Seriously, 1 minute 10 second score, that's like a splash. not deep enough to drown it, thank God. We're coming towards the end of this tragic symphony with Saving Elliot, the big set piece track, 6 minutes and 31 seconds of Corvin trying to salvage the shipwreck with an epic score that's honestly better than the scene it's backing. The last thing I'm going to torture you with is Don't Look Back and Ending. Just when you think it's safe to go back in the water, Corvin throws us a bow with two little nuggets of auditory hope that maybe, just maybe, the movie's going to end with something salvageable. But like a fart in the wind, it's there, then it's fucking gone, leaving you with a vague sense of disappointment and a slightly bitter taste in your mouth. Overall, Corvin's horror is like finding a designer suit in a secondhand store. It's good quality, clearly doesn't belong here, and it can't shake off the stench of its surroundings. It's a damn shame this music had to sit in the same pool as this fucking film. But at least your ears get a brief respite from the rest of this sewage spill. So thanks, Mark Corbin. At least somebody tried to save this thing from being a complete and utter clusterfuck. Alright, you ghoulies and ghosties, it's time to put your ear holes on hold because we're pausing to take a break. Sweet some whiskey or whatever poison keeps you sane. And for the love of all that's fucking unholy, don't go anywhere. I've got more to say about this shit show Night Swim, and you bet your ass you're going to want to hear it. We're coming back faster than you can down that drink. Stay tuned.
It is not the offspring of witchcraft or Satan. It was created by man. It will grow to be 15 feet tall. It will have huge eyes, webbed hands, hooked claws. It will walk upright. And it will mindlessly, mercilessly kill every living thing it meets. Prophecy.
Portion of the Movie Pit podcast is brought to you by Fright Rags. Are you sick freaks craving a wardrobe that screams bloody murder? Get your gore-loving asses over to Fright Rags, the ultimate pit stop for horror apparel sharper than Freddy's claws and cooler than Jason's mask on a frosty Friday night. Since 2003, they've decked out horror hounds in the sickest tees, handing out scares like candy on Halloween. Got a soft spot for those twisted slashers and demented demons? They've got them all, from Trick or Treat to the goddamn Prince of Playtime, Chucky, starting at just $26. But hold on to your guts, it's not just shirts. We're peddling socks that'll make your feet the last thing they see before the lights go out. Lounge pants looser than the morals in a teen slasher flick. And fucking souvenir cups that'll have you sipping to a bloodbath. Unsure which demented duds to don. Can't decide if you want to rep the shape or sport some sadistic socks. Let them pick your poison. Rush your horror-loving ass over to FrightRags.com. What are you waiting for? An engraved invitation from Dracula. Chop chop, before these bestsellers slice their way out of stock. Check out the website. That's FrightRags.com. You've got 45 seconds, starting now.
All right. Let's get down and dirty with the so-called critical response to Night Swim, where, let me say, these critics seem to be swimming in a different pool than the rest of us. They must have been wearing those fancy goggles with the built-in rose-colored filters or some shit. Because damn, did we even watch the same fucking movie? So Rotten Tomatoes gave this pile of supernatural aquatic nonsense a 22%, which frankly, feels like charity for Rotten Tomatoes, because they can be a little fucking a lot harsher if they want to be. And that's with an average rating of 4.3 out of 10, which mathematically speaking, I guess is about right for charity work. The website's consensus reads, despite a promising start and a handful of solid scares, Night Swim is undone by a premise that just isn't strong enough to support a feature-length film. Well, no shit, Sherlock. Maybe that's because this premise is thinner than the plot of a porno and definitely not as entertaining. And then we have Metacritic with a score of 43 out of 100, indicating mixed or average reviews. Average. That's the kind of grade you give a high school essay when you didn't even read the damn thing. But the students got heart. Mixed, more like a mixed bag of expired candy that not even a starving seagull would take a chance on. Audiences polled by CinemaScore must have been in a generous mood, because they handed out a C to this film. Let's face it, that's a grade you give to a kid who shows up to class and doesn't burn down the school. In post-track, 45% of that audience gave a positive score. I'm wondering if they meant to review a totally different movie, or if they were just that excited to get out of the fucking house. But it's not all global warming melting our popsicles here. Owen Gleiberman from Variety says the audiences are never immersed in the movie's terror. And listen to this. It restores a certain order to the cinematic universe by being as tepid and unscary as a properly early in January movie should be. Well, Owen, you are not wrong. The cinematic universe can sleep tight knowing that the balance has been restored with this predictable puddle of eeriness. In the darker corner of the sandbox, we have Frank Scheck from The Hollywood Reporter, who dubbed this film the shallow end of the horror film pool. He says Night Swim is as silly as it sounds, despite attempts to drum up suspense. Calling it the shallow end of generosity, Frankie, I'd say it's barely not enough water to cover your toes without the fear of stepping on a used band-aid. Peter Tao from the Toronto Star pitched his 2 cents, giving the film 2 out of 4, yet noting that the short story was superior. And I do agree with that. Watch the short film. That's the way this movie should have remained. But not going to get into that right now. So what happened on the way to the feature film? Well, folks, there are horror fans out there who won't jump at a ghost fart in an empty hallway, and Matthew Monagle from the Austin Chronicle gave it a score of 3 out of 5. He figures Night Swim is a solid movie and said, we'll take what McGuire has to offer every day of the week. Well, Matt, if you're being served a bland plate of spiritless spook spaghetti, then, by all means, keep slurping. A teensy beam of positivity shot through from Melissa Wilkinson at the New York Times, but even she admitted that while the third act's goofiness almost waterlogged the emotional resonance, it does the job. Yeah, Alyssa, if the job is making you wonder why you didn't just spend the evening watching paint dry. So there you have it, kids. Night Swim's critical reception is like going to a seance only to find out the medium is channeling a dead goldfish. It just flops around, leaving everyone thoroughly underwhelmed. It's like somebody set out to make a gourmet meal and ended up serving us a bowl of wet cereal. 5 out of 10, if I'm feeling generous, which I'm not. All right, you stuck with me through the riptide of Night Swim and bloody, it was a dredging fucking dog paddle. Look, end of the day, I'll give this movie, I'll agree with the majority of the rational critics out there. I'll give it a 5 out of 10. It's not the best film. It's absolutely not the best film in the world. It's absolutely not the worst film in the world. And that's, like I said, that 5 out of 10 is me being generous because apparently I'm in a good mood today. Maybe I need to reevaluate my drinking choices before I start reviewing these things. Anywho. Night Swim tried to take us down to Davy Jones' locker, but all I got was a face full of chlorine and disappointment. Now, for something hopefully less treacherous, next week we'll be back with Roleplay starring Kaylee Cuoco. I'm pinning my hopes on this one, so don't let me down, Cuoco. Let's see if there's more to this one than just dressing up in bedroom antics. All right, my glorious band of misfits, keep your heads above water, and remember, if your backyard pool starts whispering sweet nothings to you, run the other fucking way. And as always, till next time, kiddies.
Thank you for listening to this The Movie Pit Movie Review. We hope you have enjoyed your time. Come back to the Movie Pit Podcast each week for a new movie review podcast. The Movie Pit is produced by Ryan Boozer Johnson and Seth Chapman. The opinions expressed in this podcast are those of the individual hosts and may not reflect the views